Access number 10768, Reel 5.
Saying that the French didn't get like the British troops.
No, we always had the idea that they were traitors to us. For some reason.
What gave you that idea?
Well, we caught one or two signals in two of the jetties. As an example, there were certain landmarks on that round about the Everton area there, where that were not knocked down. That there was an old windmill. At one spot, and then one little corner of one of the trenches, there was one of these donkey engines, you know, for a boiler. And then they never seemed to bomb them. And when we had them in our possession, you see, we'd float through and two, we'd be going there and shifting them back about a quarter of a mile or so, and then they. When they felt like it, they'd come and give us a bloody shove, and that was how it was. There was nothing really big happening for a period. Then there seemed to be that nice little quiet. We could put spades up and let them have a shoot at them, you see, and they could do the same with us.
Did you ever actually hear of any French spies caught?
Well, we caught a couple or so there. One old dame was signalling to the Jerrys. Out of the top of that old windmill.
What was she using?
No, we don't know. I don't know, but they were caught. They caught her there.
You heard they were caught?
I heard they were caught. They caught her, yes. And there was another one where some fellas, some French blokes, were flagging, signalling to the Jerrys.
How did they show up when you met them when you were marching about? Or
no one met any of them. I never did. As a matter of fact, we never got away from the trench area. Well, I didn't, one of them. But some of the lads did get leave and went down to Paris for a weekend. But that was when they were supposed to be what they called war-worn. But I don't know how they come to get that, but I never dropped for anything like that. We were either in the front line or the reserve or the support lines. We had, let's say, 10 days up first, the first place, then come back 10 days and sort of. And you were never out of those three categories.
And this was to various places in the Somme area.
Yes,
and then you settled on a long time at Hebuterne.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you about conditions in the Hebuterne area.
Well, it was just
Could you describe what the. How you would reach the front line in that area?
All trenches.
The communication trenches?
All communication trenches, yeah.
How far back would they extend at that time?
From they were along. It wasn't a case of back. You've got the different lines of them, so many lines of them, and they went right the way along the whole of the front, you see.
But how would you? I was talking about when you're going forward to them. How far back would communication trenches go between the lines?
Oh, well, from one trench to another, do you mean? Oh, they were zigzag all over the place, you see. Some of them were just a short distance, and most of them had a run up out the trench onto the level, you see, because the messengers. At that time when we had none of this business, and it depended on the old tap business, the signallers doing the Morse code, and any messages had to be taken down, say, from company headquarters to battalion headquarters to the brigade headquarters.
Now, so how wide would the communication trenches be? About 3 foot.
3 or 4 foot, yeah.
And they were deep enough to you were right under?
Well, there was a firing step, you see.
In a communication trench?
In all the trenches, there was a firing step there. You see, and all the way along. You see, it was like a...
It was in bays,
you see. You got the bay there, and then the firing step. The firing step had a step on like that, about, say, 18 inches from the floor. It was only soil, or clay, whichever you were in. And when you stood on that, of course, you wasn't very careful, yeah. Ta-da, good night.
How deep were they in all, then, the trenches, the front line?
The front line, would be just tall, about your height.
About 6 foot,
no? About 6 foot, yes. I was very lucky being shot, because I could walk, stood up without any really worry, and if it hit me, well, I'd have a bullet that's come down at me. So...
Were there trenches duckboarded?
Oh, yes, all duckboarded.
And was there a lot of...
We made our own arrangements for dugouts and that and all that. There were lots of dugouts.
Are we coming to dugouts?
Yeah.
Were the sides held up with wire or wood? Were they revetted?
Oh, no, they were all muck, you know.
It was just plain earth?
If they couldn't find anything, they'd try and revet them, the lads, you see, but it was just the earth, a hole down. And a bit of a step down to get underneath the earth, more or less. They weren't lying out on the top of the earth. They tried to get in so that they were undercover. It was night and that sort of time. And it was raining.
So you build your own dugouts like that?
How big
would they be?
There were dugouts were there, you see, when we got there, and all we had to do was try and sort of revet them a little bit, try and keep them as good as we could.
How deep would they go into the side?
Well, they'd run about a man's length, that's all. It's just room enough to get in them.
So they're more like cubby holes?
That's right, just like cubby holes, that's right. And,
did they have any of the deeper dugouts where you go down steps and into a room
affair? Oh, yes, I'll tell you about one of them.
Would that be further back for the officers?
The officers just did the same as us, dug out where we were. But when we were at one place called the Bassey, Labsse, and that was where they were in the chalk there. The trenches, and Jerry was in them.
Right, I'll come to that then when we get to Labasse, because otherwise, you know, we'll stick to talking about the Somme where it was.
Yeah,
it was,
well, that's part of the Somme, Labasse. All that chalk round there, that was all part of the Somme. It was just, from what I made of it, it was just a huge chalk mine there on that part of the Somme. And then the farm land came up to that, and that was just a part of it, but it was, had been cultivated, as you might say, and it must have been a big chalk industry from there, because they went down the height of that school around there, right down like a huge, as if it had been cutting away the chalk for some reason, for some source or other, and of course they got this big crater. The first time I saw it, I said to my man, I said, that's been a bloody big shell that's done that. And of course the shell couldn't have done it. We exploded afterwards, you see. We went down the sides of it, there were crude steps, and then there was holes like a proper doorway in the, and we could go down into there, and they could put a regiment under there. We went in there and were sleeping in there for a period when we were down there, and they got wire beds and everything in it. And when we took that off Jerry, when we got him going back that way, and that was a godsend for us there.
That was the exception, though, rather than the rule.
Oh, that was the exception, aye, that was. Absolutely.
What would you keep in your in the dugout? Would you leave anything there, any of your kit, or would you just carry it always with you?
Well, we carried most of it. If it was dry and it's in, we wouldn't do our trench coats, you see, we'd just leave them down there. And then, of course, we'd have the Billy Canny, you know, for your grub and that. I'm sure we were having our grub, we'd sit together, you know. Even sometimes we could manage to crouch in one of the dugouts if it was wet out like that. But
how many would there be in a dugout, the cubby hole?
As many as you can really get in it.
Which would be?
In fact, there were only two or three. As a matter of fact, this sergeant that I knew so well, he and I, we went under where this big donkey engine was, had been, a donkey boiler. And there was a proper little door into there, and of course him, Rank, he scalloped that, and the two of us had that for all the time we were on that Everton front, was in that, and it was great. And I got sacks and everything else, and sacked, you know, put the Duke sacks on the ground there, for we should have a good sleeping there, quite good. I was really very privileged at that period.
How was it decided who got what dugout when you arrived in the line?
Well, the first thing you saw, you bloody grabbed.
So it wasn't organised?
Oh, no, you just grabbed it. Yeah, but you can. Yeah.
How did you get your rations brought up?
Well, they used to be brought up. When you were in the front line, they used to bring them up to the rail, the road, top of the nearest main road, and they were in those big tank things that just curve slightly and fit over your back, and then you've got to get them over your shoulders and cart them up there.
You'd have a ration party go back for it?
Oh, you had a ration party, you had to go back for it. If you didn't always go the same, two or three of them would be sort of orderly men, as you might call them. It was only just the fact that it was their day on, or you only did it every so often, you see, according to the number of chaps there were.
So you did it, did you?
Oh, I did that.
What would happen? What time would you go back?
Oh, we went out just when it was meal time. You see, when the rations came up, one of the lads, the team that were bringing them up onto the main road, one of them would come up to the trenches, ration us up, you see. Well, the ration party would go down there, and we had straps up, would come over your shoulders like that, like a brace, and then Mrs. Ingram on your back, you see.
And would it be hot food?
Oh, yeah. Hot soup and all sorts, yeah.
What type of food would you get then? Can you remember?
Oh, it was quite good. Oh, and quite good. It was all... We didn't get any sort of three or four kilt course meals. It was just some stew or something like that. We had these McConaughey things, you know, big cans they were, they just hot up. And they were like a mean...
You'd heat them in the can?
They'd heat them in the cans for us.
They'd heat them?
Oh, yes, because we had no fires anywhere up there. We had the old Tommy little heater thing in a tin like that, but that was only just barely warm anything up. They were all warmed up anything that needed warming was warmed when we came up.
So... You got McConaughey's and stews and soup.
Corned beef and all that type of
thing. Would you get tins of corned beef?
Oh, bags of them, yeah. We had them many. We used to line out the bottoms of the dugouts with tins of corned beef. Miles of it.
Did you get sick of it?
We got more than sick of it. We never said, but they want to see any bloody corned beef when you get home. We had that lot, yeah.
Oh, would you get the corned beef when you didn't get the hot meal, or would you get it as
well? Well, it was just what they decided to do. It was on the menu.
What sort of meat would it be in the stews?
It was good meat. It was like a steak.
So that wouldn't be called beef
in the... it was like a casserole. Like you can get them in tins now in these shops. Like a casserole. Meat and vegetables and all of that in. It's a hot meal.
And how would they dole them out? You carry them up on the scrap fair.
Oh, yeah.
With the Dixies. Yeah.
Well, you get your own ration. There was not so much for each, you see.
Who doled it out? The people?
The ordinary man. The ordinary man, yes.
Was there any disputes about who got what?
Not much, no. We were all glad to get a bit and that was it. We weren't dissatisfied. We got it. We got the rations and that was it. You see, and... So, there was never much dispute at all about morals out like that amongst the lads.
How did you open the tins when you did have the tins?
Oh, you got a tin opener.
You had a tin opener?
Some used the bayonets. You could open them up with your top and your bayonet. You know, just run it round. Yeah. But otherwise, maybe some clever lad always had a tin opener.
Would you get bread?
Oh, yes. Of course, we got plenty of bread. If we wanted it, there was no shortage.
What about cheese, things like that?
Yes, cheese. One of the staple things was bread with margarine, cheese, and jam. That make a sandwich. They'd make sandwiches of bread, margarine, cheese, and jam.
Was the cheese in tins, or was it...
No, it was just like ordinary
loose
cheese.
What about the jam?
Jam was in the tins, yeah.
What was it? What type of jam?
All sorts. Apricot jam, raspberry jam, all the rest of it.
So there was a reasonable variety of
There was
jam.
Plenty of everything, yes. They weren't short for that.
So you were, as far as you were concerned, you got enough to eat, and it was still good.
Absolutely good, yes.
And the only... Did you get bored of the whole diet or just of the bully beef?
Well, you couldn't get... There's no use getting tired of anything because there was no alternative. So what came up, you had.
Would you guess, what meals would you actually get? They'd bring up three times a day or they
We'd
once?
Get a breakfast and a dinner and a tea.
And that was all brought up?
That was all brought up, yes.
What would the breakfast be? I think the other
side... Bacon and that. And something.
Eggs.
Oh, yes, we got egg and bacon.
In the front line?
In the front line, yes. Yes, sometimes. It was not very often, but we got them. And sausage and that type of thing. And that was all manhandled like that. When we went across, the first time we went across out of our lines into the Germans, when we advanced into their lines, when we got in their trenches, there's the front line like that there, from that, coming from the back up, there was a roadway as wide as this house, all done in planks, and the horses used to bring it up to them, right into the front line, with rubber hoofs on, and rubber wheels on the carts, on the limbers, and they used to bring all their food up into the front line. There was two of the big horses, there were the horses like our Shire horses, big ones, and two of them, there was a couple of them lying on the roadside that had been killed, the horses.
So you get this breakfast, then you get the stew or meat for lunch.
Yeah.
And then... What would you get at tea time? when you get the bread and jam and cheese?
Yeah, that's what it would be about too then, yes.
What about water ration and tea? What, tea the drink?
Well, I had a tea. Well, with regards to water, you see, we had to just get that more or less out the shell holes.
You drank water from shell holes?
From the shell holes. Well, the thing was, you got to be careful, and the only thing... that was your saviour was the frogs. Now if you went to a shell hole for water, that would be a luck person. If you saw frogs in it, you could drink it, because the frogs killed all the other insects. And if you got frogs in it, you were all right. But we took miles of dirty blue water.
Were you not worried about water with gas in it? Because mustard gas gets in water.
No, there was no mustard gas used. There was only the tear gas used on that front.
And that didn't affect the water?
No, it didn't affect the water.
What about sort of dead bodies and things in waters, that sort of thing?
Well, you have to just push them on one side. You couldn't move them out, they were there. In the shower holes, all the shower holes all over the place, there was dead bodies in them lying there.
But you drink the water anyway?
We drink the water, yeah.
Did you try and purify it at all?
Well, we couldn't. What could we do? We couldn't do it with none of this deodorants and all them sort of things.
And you weren't discouraged from drinking from shell holes?
Well, you're glad to shell it, to drink it. When you're damn thirsty, you're going to drink, aren't you?
Did you get water coming up as well for your water bottles?
Oh, we got so much. You got your tea coming up, say, in the big pannikins. That would come up, we'd get that up, and that'd be warm. That, where they got the water from would be down at below from springs and streams.
But that wasn't enough, the tea and the water ration. You had to get...
Oh, no, we had to have a drink of it. Otherwise, you get it where you can.
What about any other rations? Did you get a rum ration at all?
When are you going over, yes.
Only when you were going over?
That's when you got your rum ration, yeah.
And how much would you get?
Well, you get a good dose of hot coffee and a good dose of rum.
You get coffee with it?
Oh, yes. Coffee. Nice and sweetened up, and then there's also the ration of coffee of rum in it. You see, rum and coffee, and it ran in big dixies like that.
And who doled the rum out?
Oh, one of the NCOs.
And were they very careful with it?
Oh, I'd say. They used to come up in these big stone jars, and I always remember on the top of the jar it had SRD. But that's food for I never know, but that was a rum issue. And they used to bring a big jar like that, say, 2 or 3 gallon jar it was. And they'd have a big spoon and dish it out to you. One of the NCOs, or sometimes the officer would do it.
Would you drink yours? I mean,
I drank mine, of course I did.
Did it affect you at all?
No.
Wasn't enough to knock you drunk, no. Did you notice any effect at all after drinking it?
No, I never did, no. I just used to drink it. I don't know about any of the others, but there wasn't enough, really, to make you feel, say, drunk or anything like that. They give you perhaps a bit of Dutch courage, but that was about as far as I'd like to say it ever went.
So, and no other time you got it? What about cigarettes? Did you get a cigarette ration?
Oh, we got miles of them. We used to get cigarettes from the Americans. 5 packets of 20 every week, practically. They sent them over in 5 packets for 20. That was 100 cigarettes. And on every lot there was a postcard tied around, you know, fastened around. And that told you where they'd come from and who sent them to you. And then we were supposed to sort of acknowledge them and send them back.
Did you?
Well, we did, because we didn't say we'd know what else to do at times. Of course, we used to put some awful stuff on them to these people, Mrs. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, what are you doing to that sort of thing? We used to get a bit of support out of that with them, sending these cards back. Well, you're never short of cigarettes.
Did you get a ration issue as well?
No, we didn't get any, not one from our place.
So you were just getting them from...
Getting them from these other people, you see, the foreigners.
Did you smoke then?
When did I start smoking? I'll tell you when I started smoking. It was when we were at that place where the aerodrome was, where I went down for the course.
We'll come to the cut, that's when you start. Why did you start?
Well, I was coming out of the door of the hangar, one of the hangars, and who should be coming in was a chappy. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "God blimey, Jack Granger." I said, "God, blimey, Joe David." He lived next door but one to me in Highfield Road there. And he said, at that time I got one hell of a toothache. And he says, "What's wrong with your face?" I said, "I've got just one hell of a toothache. And it's driving me mad." He says, "Do you smoke?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, get some cigarettes." He says, "Here, I'll give you a couple." He says, "Ration's coming round today." He says, "Smoke your cigarettes." And he says, "Inhale the smoke and wriggle it around in your mouth." He says, "And that'll cure it for you." So I went back into the hut and I lit one of these cigarettes up. When he really choked me. Anyway, I did what he said. I had about four goes at the one first cigarette, and then I did the same with the second cigarette. And lo and behold, I went off to sleep on my bed. When I woke up, the toothache had gone. So when the rations came round, all the lads used to come, give you a cig, Jack, you know, all that. So, that's when I started smoking. I smoked wood bands then, 40 wood bands a day for 40 years.
Did almost everybody smoke in the trenches?
Oh, yes, practically everybody, yes.
Why do you think that was? Or do you think more people smoked in the trenches than elsewhere?
Well, there was nothing else to do. It was one of the few things you could do. The only drawback was you've got to be careful at night. When it was dark, you actually cut the smoking out, you see. Because one time we were all going through to a place called Riencourt overnight, and one of our lads were on the roadside, sleeping out on the roadside during the night, and one of our lads lit up a fag, you see, and of course one of the NCOs doing all that rollicking and all that. And next morning, just as dawn was breaking, one of the jerrys came along, just a single plane, all the way along with his machine gun, and two or three of the lads got knocked out, completely killed, just through him lighting his cigarette. She saw it was a very serious crime, turned to be lighting up after dark.
Do you think it helped steady your nerves, smoking?
Oh yes, we all thought so. We just thought so. I used to always say it always did me good for my nerves and all that business, and it took me one hell of a time to stop it.
Is that one reason why you smoke so many? Because 40 a day. Did you smoke that many in the trenches once you started?
Yeah, we all was smoking. Like 40 a day after I'd seen all that lad, and after that toothache went. Yeah. And then when I came.
Were there any superstitions about lighting up in the trenches?
The three matches, no. Third time. Well, a lot of them did. It was just a load of rubbish. They wouldn't have a third light off you, you know.
But it didn't bother you.
Well, got your light, and that was it.
Any other rations that came up that you can remember? Anything else?
I don't think we got anything else as regards luxuries or anything like that. Can't remember myself.
Did you get any parcels while you were in the line?
Oh, we got parcels from home.
While you were in the line?
Oh, yes, all the parcels used to come up from home.
What would be in the parcels?
Oh, everything and anything. Food of all sorts. And we had a system whereby there was the company clerk. He had to get all these parcels and letters as they came up, you know, in the batches to each company, and then he'd give them out. And if any of the lads, well, it was food in parcels, the lads got it. But if there was any there sort of parcels with grub in, that the lad had either got wounded or killed and gone down the line, all we did was to, we used to put that to Mrs. Fletcher. We used to have a Mrs. Fletcher, hypothetical she was, and everything that was over went to her, and that was whacked out amongst lads. And I'll put it, it was a floating pond, you might call it. That was any that had gone back home.
And you'd actually get these brought up to you while you're in the front
line? Oh, we got right in the front line, yes, cakes and everything.